Welcome to The Smart Life, a podcast from Beacon Agency that explores the latest in smart home and Internet of Things technology. I'm your host, Sophie, and I'm the content director here at Beacon. Each week, I'm joined by some of the biggest thought leaders in smart tech, here to unpick the challenges and opportunities faced by the industry as we endeavour to make the world of smart tech just that little bit more human. Today, I am joined by Lino Notaro, Retail and E-commerce Sales Director for TP-Link, a global provider of everyday networking devices and accessories. Their product portfolio has evolved with the changing landscape of technology and now boasts many smart connectivity solutions among its offering. Lino himself has over 30 years' experience of working in the computer and electronics industry, so has seen firsthand the inordinate amount of technological progress the last four decades have held. "We've come a long way," he says, from the early days of his career, working in the then up-and-coming computer games industry of the 90s, where he had to convince consumers that computers were not just a flash in the pan. Today, Lino is TP-Link Sales Director for the Consumer Division, managing a small team who look after the most well-known retailers and e-commerce platforms in the UK. When not at work, he can be found training for the Bedford Half Marathon and enjoying online chess, but not, he reliably informs me, at the same time. Lino, welcome to The Smart Life.
Hello, Sophie. Thank you very much.
Have you always been interested in smart technology?
Yes. Well, I guess I've always been interested in and excited by technology. If I take you back, I guess, to my childhood, just to kick off, really, when I was given my first computer, the Commodore 64, and it enabled me to sort of play computer games with my friends, etc., in the same street. I think that was the first piece of technology that I was super excited about. And then came along portable consoles like the Sega Game Gear and Nintendo Game Boy. Tetris was such an addictive game, as you know, as we all know, we're now all very familiar with Tetris. So those were the first pieces of, smart technology that I was excited about. During the early part of my career, I then started using PDAs, which essentially were sort of digital diaries that you would sync with your Outlook email platform. Then SatNav came along a few years after that, and my sense of direction is legendary bad. It's shocking. So the SatNav, that came along was a very convenient and exciting piece of technology that you could have in your car, and it could guide you to the places that you wanted to get to on time. And then one other piece of technology that we were all excited about when I first joined Logitech, one of the companies that I've worked for in my career. Just after joining, we launched the first wireless optical mouse. And obviously it's a very humble device nowadays, but it was a very exciting gadget that no one had seen before. So that was a very exciting sort of part of my career. And actually just working for Logitech in general was a very enjoyable time with all of the new gadgets that they were launching at the time. So yes, my life and my career has been full of new gadgets and products. Although I wouldn't say I was probably the most passionate in terms of, I know other people that are live and breathe technology much more than I do, but those are the sort of one or two of the milestones of technology that I've used and found exciting along the way.
I love that computer mouse is one of them. That's excellent.
Yes. We all take it for granted nowadays.
Of course.
But it was a very exciting device at the time, or very new and innovative device. Not a mouse per se, but a wireless and optical mouse. Because at the time, mice were very much mechanical with a ball. I'm not sure. You may be too young to remember a mouse with a ball.
I do remember the ball. I do. I remember constantly getting grit in it and unpicking it. Yes. We had an Amstrad and an Amiga when I was growing up. So yes,
right.
I do remember the ball.
Right, indeed. So yes, so as I say, the advent of an optical wireless mouse was very exciting for the time. So
And we laugh, but actually it's a bit of a privilege for something to become as commonplace as a wireless mouse.
Indeed.
For me to go, a mouse, like poo-pooing it, like who am I to poo-poo? But that's surely the nirvana for all great inventions, isn't
Absolutely.
It that it gets to the point where it's so commonplace people laugh at the idea of it not existing. So were you aware of the speed of progression that technology was moving at, or is it only with hindsight looking back that you have that sort of attitude?
So, yeah, I mean, I think with hindsight, I mean, having thought about this, you know, with hindsight, you kind of, you travel through life and through your career, taking new things for granted. But as I say, you do realise at the time also that you know, when something new and innovative comes along, you think, oh, wow, that is really innovative and new and exciting, and I can now do this. You know, you begin to think of the benefits of these new technologies as they come along. But at the same time, I guess it's almost like watching your child grow. You don't really notice that they're growing until you look at the photographs from years ago and you think, wow, you've grown. You know, that is that sort of thing, really,
yeah,
where you look back in hindsight over a space of 10 years or more and you think, goodness me, how things have changed so quickly. So a bit of both, I guess.
I guess you must have seen in the last few years this sort of escalation in terms of the move towards smart tech as opposed to just the development of tech. Gone are the days of you trying to convince people that computers are something to invest in, but smart technology and the advent of the Internet of Things and this idea of connectivity is incredible, the progress that's been made in quite a short amount of time, even within your career.
Indeed. I mean, obviously, you sort of just mentioned the Internet. Obviously, that was the platform upon which Internet of Things has used to grow and become more appealing, and smart tech and the gadgets and the products that TP-Link particularly have launched. Obviously, I've been reliant on connectivity and the access to the internet, etc. And you know, they've now become very convenient products, and many of them are very affordable products that you know, consumers can use it on a daily basis. And actually, I mean, for example, like cameras, you know, smart cameras, they do perform quite a complex, you know, sort of task in terms of, you know, monitoring and relaying video content across the internet to your device in order that you can keep an eye on your home and your driveway or particular possessions that you'd like to keep an eye on, or even relatives, etc. So, you know, these devices have become very simple to use, even though they deliver, you know, a somewhat complex task.
Which is why they are getting more and more adoption into the mass market, I suppose, because if they were complicated, they would have fallen at the first hurdle of once the early adopters had taken them.
Indeed. And economies of scale have enabled these products to become ever more affordable and therefore able to attract new consumers, you know, with regards to the, as I say, the affordability of these products. And they are becoming much more commonplace now, not just for the enthusiast, but for, you know, everyday Joe Blogs that was initially, you know, sort of intimidated or not really sure about how the technology works and unwilling to make the investment to find out, really.
Mm. What excites you the most about smart technology?
I think it's just the way that these products bring convenience, security, peace of mind, all together, all in one place, really, and the fact that the products have become so easy to install, and the, you know, the connectivity with the smartphone or the tablet and the app that comes with our products, and then use on an everyday basis. I mean, we're about to launch a new range of smart vacuum cleaners, for example. And the idea of them is that perhaps when you're not home, you can program these devices to vacuum your carpets and mop your kitchen when you're at work all day long. So, you know, these technologies, you know, can assist your everyday life and bring convenience and, you know, even do household chores. So, you know, that is just one example of how these devices have become you know, very helpful to everyday life, really. And I personally also believe it or not, this is my, I think it's a quite realistic sort of expectation that many households in the world will soon have robots helping them around and delivering chores and bringing them cups of tea and all of that. And that's not far away. It really isn't.
I think I don't know if you saw the news lately about an AI creative photograph had won a prestigious award, and the photographer came clean and said, look, we need to have a conversation about this. I think this idea of artificial intelligence and robots is a really exciting one about sort of the power for good that they can have. I think that the way that that integrates into the smart home technology, it'd be really exciting to watch.
I think I heard this morning on the news that there was a song that was pulled down from streaming services that was created by AI.
Yes, I saw that as well. Yes, it was uploaded on Spotify, and it got through. And I think we're in the middle of something. I think people look back and they'll think, This moment was really seminal for the development, the rate of development as well.
Yes. And of course, also ChatGPT, which sounds like an extremely powerful piece of software that can, answer questions or put together some copy just by giving it a limited brief. It's incredible the processing power that these things have,
and it
now
gets more intelligent the more people use it. I had a bit of a play with it, being a word person. I was very skeptical, and I thought, I'll give it a go, and I was really impressed. And that's a testament to the sort of amount of content that it's drawing upon. So I think there's so much going on there's so many sort of things in orbit in our brain at the moment. But what do you see as the biggest challenges to the industry, and also the biggest opportunities in this sort of maelstrom of development we're in?
I think one of the biggest challenges for technology products, but smart home products in particular, are that early adopters would have embraced smart technology, they would have understood it and got it. And I think that one of the challenges here is that if we're not careful, we might kind of not be able to recruit and attract consumers that are, as I say, everyday average Joes that still have the perception of, that's going to be really difficult to use and install. I don't really know. I'm a bit intimidated by it. I'm not knowledgeable enough to use it, etc. And actually, many of our products nowadays are very easy to use. So I think the onus is on us and other similar brands is to continue educating consumers to help them understand that these products are extremely easy to use and install, and by way of the app that's obviously free and downloadable onto your smartphone or tablet, that you can execute something as simple as switching on a lamp of an evening when you're not home to simulate that you are home for security reasons, all the way up to switching on and programming a vacuum cleaner, as I say, to vacuum your living room carpet whilst you're away. I also think that innovations like geofencing. So what we're about to introduce that innovation within some of our products. What that enables you to do, and I guess this kind of thing can look complex, although it is very simple. What that enables you to do is that when you breach a certain area of your neighborhood, it can enable the products that you're wanting to switch on to automate them automatically. So if you're 5 minutes away from home and you breach a predestined, pre-programmed area of your neighborhood, it switches on lights and maybe the coffee machine or the TV or whatever it is, or a fan or a heater, on automatically just by breaching that area of the map that you've pre-programmed. So just convenience, peace of mind, that sort of thing. Yeah. And I think we need to continue conveying the benefit. And it is a benefit-led education, is that, a smart plugs into the mains. Okay, so what? Well, the benefit of that device, enables you to do X, Y, and Z. So it's about conveying the benefits rather than, and I think to some degree on networking, we've been guilty of talking about speeds and feeds and communicating to the knowledgeable person who knows what that language looks like, rather than communicating the benefits of our products and the technologies that we innovate.
Yeah, a key thing that you said about education there, I guess so much of it comes down to perception. Like, the industry will only ever be as successful as how useful and worthwhile people perceive it to be. And
absolutely,
we often have a debate on this podcast as to whether or not smart technology is a luxury or a gimmick or a force for good. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's definitely not a luxury, and it's definitely not a gimmick. I mean, when you say luxury, I think of, you know, very expensive and sort of not very accessible. No, these are not luxuries at all. They're very commonplace products that, as I say, are very accessible and not complex in any way. I mean, another benefit of a smart plug is that if you've got an iron plugged into, I mean, we've all probably been guilty of rushing out of a morning and then either in the car, on the bus, or on the train thinking, did I switch off the iron?
The amount of times we turned around thinking my mum left the hair straighteners on when I was younger.
Right. Yeah. Right. And by having it plugged into such a device, you can, you know, again, have peace of mind. It's like, right, I'll open up my app and switch it. Oh no, it was already switched off. It was fine. But at least you have the ability to you know, switch these things off if you need to.
Yeah.
So it's just, again, you know, a combination of convenience, peace of mind, security, etc., that these products deliver in abundance, and they're affordable, easy to use, and you know, easy to install.
Yeah. And go back to your comment where you said about the education on the benefits. I think that it would be foolish of me not to mention the biggest thing that's happened to our generation of late, because smart home industry always has its eye on the next big disruptor to come along, the next big thing that's going to cause a stir and cause the ripples. But I don't think anyone anticipated that the biggest disruptor of a generation would come in the form of a global pandemic.
Yeah.
I kind of like to think as well, like, that it changed our viewpoint towards the internet and towards our technology, because although I never think any of us necessarily thought of it as a villain, although maybe some parents of children who they can't extricate their smart devices from would disagree, but I don't think we consider it as villain. But I do think in the pandemic, the internet took on this new life almost as a bit of a hero of the hour. I always felt sometimes that we should be applauding the people keeping the internet going just as, well, maybe not just as much, but you know, we were there. It was someone that we couldn't physically do without. We couldn't leave the house, and the internet came of age for us, and we just couldn't have navigated. I think back to, you know, at the time there were people making the comparisons to the Spanish flu outbreak and how we had it easy, like no one was asked, we were just being asked to stay at home and watch Netflix. But we couldn't have done it the way that we did without the internet, and no one necessarily thought about, or maybe you did at TP-Link, but I certainly didn't think about how much I rely on the internet before the pandemic.
No, indeed. But we definitely saw it just moving sort of category. We're market leaders within the Wi-Fi networking space as well. And the absolutely just unbelievable demand that we saw on everything that enables you to upgrade your network, your networking infrastructure at home, like routers and mesh and USB adapters and everything that enabled your Wi-Fi to be enhanced, we saw exceptional, unprecedented demand on those products. And it was because, as you said, we were all locked up for a bit. Children couldn't go to school. They were studying at home. You know, parents were working from home, and all of a sudden you had the whole household needing to access the internet at the same time, whether it be for work or pleasure. And it was like our router just can't cope anymore. We're all doing things at the same time. And also with the advent of Netflix, as you said, we're using the internet for more demanding applications as well. Yeah. And therefore, you know, where your consumers are looking for better Wi-Fi expansion or delivery of Wi-Fi devices in the home, and in order to facilitate their work and their leisure time, etc. And I mean, in line with that, you know, TP-Link have recently launched Wi-Fi 6 products, which is a brand new standard of Wi-Fi. Wi-Fi 6E is an extension of that, and very soon we're going to be launching Wi-Fi 7 products. So TP-Link as a brand is constantly pushing the envelope and bringing new standards of Wi-Fi to the marketplace in order that consumers can use more demanding applications, use more devices at home, and have a great user experience.
Wow.
In January of CES, which is the biggest consumer electronics show, we launched a range of Wi-Fi 7 products on our stand, and we'll be launching and bringing those to market later this year, and you'll see them in retailers and e-com platforms over the next few months.
Amazing. I think it's because people are considering the infrastructure of our networks more than we ever have done before. Like, there's so much that we rely on it for. Like you mentioned about education and then Netflix and stuff, but pretty much there was no area of life that was not touched by the internet. For some people, especially people that were vulnerable and isolating, being able to do online shopping, not just being able to talk to loved ones, which goes without saying, but you know, entertaining yourself, the access to well-being support. So many charities turned to online as the only means to be able to support beneficiaries during the pandemic. And I think all of us sort of took for granted how reliant we are on the internet before that. But actually, it was all of those things were integral to our ability to process all the scariness that was being thrown at us left, right and center. It distracted our brains, didn't it, from this constant state of fight or flight. And yeah. I love that, you know, we use this post-pandemic, although we're living with pandemic, but post-pandemic world that we're in now, that there are still things for good that have come out of it, not less hybrid working, but even just the way that I love seeing on the news now, the sort of standard of how they interviewed guests. We were a lot more forgiving of, oh, it's just rough and ready, people being interviewed on home, you know, the dreaded children wandering in on a live street and stuff, which everyone loved so much. We love it when things go wrong, don't we? But it really changed how we appreciate these things. And we were, I don't know, I love that kind of rough and readiness of it, but now they've retained it. People do interviews with guests at home now, and I love that. But I guess... So it makes complete sense that you at TP-Link would be having to think about the pressure on the network, the infrastructure, so much of it, of the sort of heritage world of Wi-Fi that a lot of us were using. I know I dread to think how many times we were on the phone with our provider trying to get boosters and stuff in lockdown. So definitely people, and also everywhere you drive is having sort of new cables and fibers put down for improved connectivity. So it's something we've really changed our attitude to a huge amount, I think, in a very relatively short space of time.
Yeah, I would agree. And even something as simple as, you know, keeping in touch with an elderly relative, or you know, talking to someone who's in hospital you can't visit because, you know, either they've got a virus or you're trying to, you know, make sure you don't pass anything on, etc. You know, Wi-Fi and technology enables you to keep in touch with relatives that are either on the other side of the world or in a hospital, etc. And it just helps that, you know, that continued contact between, you know, a relative that you can't see physically.
Yeah.
So that was the other thing that I think it enabled. Particularly during the pandemic.
Yeah, really. And it's an idea that I've talked about before, but I love that the more advanced our technology becomes, the more it enables us to get back to this, like, tale as old as time idea that to be human is to be connected to each other.
Indeed.
But we're currently facing not only... Now, we're in this post-pandemic world we find ourselves in, but we're currently facing not only a cost of living crisis, but also an energy crisis. We're not out of the woods yet. We're not thinking, okay, great, we're all safe. We're still fighting or flighting on every saying, on every corner. That's a terrible use of English there, apologies. But meaning that this idea of the Internet of Things has to work even harder for its place at the table. What opportunities do you see that the smart tech industry is having in order to address these huge issues of people having less money, more financial concerns, and this bigger, huge issue of the need to protect the planet, get down to net zero carbon emissions?
It's funny you should say that, because there are a couple of products that come to mind within our own portfolio. I mean, you mentioned the focus on energy saving and energy use, etc. Now, we have just launched some new radiator smart valves, which enable you to, in the same way that, you know, you're able to monitor and control all of our other products, you're able to pre-program these valves to switch on your radiators, keep them at a certain temperature, you know, pre-program the time that they come on and off, or, you know, switch them on at, you know, a minute's notice, et cetera, so those products provide, again, the ability to monitor how you use your energy at home, and monitor the cost of them. And we have a smart plug, the P110, we call it, the P110, which delivers information to your app about the device that's plugged into it from a kilowatts point of view. Mm. So you're able to measure and monitor the energy that those devices are using. There's a colleague of mine who plugged in their washing machine, or I think it was a spin dryer, and they noticed how much energy it was using versus one of those dryers that you plug into the mains electricity, and the saving that can be made by using something else. Sure. You know, so I think it can also, as well as providing the convenience, it can also educate consumers as to how much some of these devices, how much energy is being used, and you know, you can monitor them and sort of save money from that point of view.
How much in day-to-day discussions does the topic of helping people to save money come up in daily life for you?
A lot, and you know, we use that to as one of the ways to educate consumers, particularly in this, you know, in this day and age, you know, with the cost of energy, and it is one of the main reasons why consumers are looking to smart technology to kind of help them manage the energy costs at home.
I think the idea of, oh well, it's good enough, is sort of no longer good enough for things at home. We've lived within our house where you just think, oh, it'll do, it'll be fine, but actually you start thinking, no, I think maybe that we are looking for in different ways to save money, to save energy, and smart devices play such an important part in that.
Absolutely, yes. And you know, it's a really convenient way to manage your energy. You don't have to be at home, you can do it remotely, etc. So yeah, it's that's very key.
People should be what it's all about.
Yes.
And as you know, we've talked a lot about this, you and I, and a bit of a passion of mine is finding people-centric, although I hate that expression, but human ways to bring these stories to life within the smart home. How do you think that the industry could be more people-centric, could shift its focus to the consumer and less to the product?
I think it's about again, going back to the benefit-led kind of explanation of products, and we do this to a degree with some of our videos, whereby we are demonstrating that the lifestyle improvements that these products can deliver. So it's I think that the better we get at demonstrating the lifestyle enhancements that these products deliver, rather than the actual products themselves, I think the more we will attract new users to this environment, to this category.
Yeah, I think the industry seems to be getting more and more aware of that. Like, because the early adopters and the really techie people who were talking techie to each other are now realizing, actually, to make it to reach that mass market milestone, what we really need to do is for people to go, huh, do you know what? Actually, that would have a real benefit to me, myself, and I at home. And you have understood my challenges. You've found me a solution which works in a way that I'm prepared to adopt. And I take real comfort from that, because I know from experience, like like I said to you before, I'm not exactly a technophobe, but I wouldn't say I was sort of very, very super techie person. But actually, since having a child, I've changed my attitude towards smart tech and the pandemic. Like we said earlier, I was pregnant through the whole lockdown. No one ever saw me, so actually it was a different lifeline. So yeah, I think the more that the industry can find ways to speak to people in a way that people makes people feel spoken to and heard, that two-way conversation, the better.
And I think part of our execution and the way, so one of the reasons why we've become successful in both areas, in both Wi-Fi networking and smart home, is that we actually have helped our customers, the retailers and the e-com players, by sharing videos in particular. I mean, as you, I'm sure you'll agree, you can only read so much text to learn about something, whatever it is. You'll only read so much text, because then after that, it just gets boring. So the way we try and engage consumers, potential consumers and customers, is by way of videos. And you know, we share as many, and we create as many videos as possible and share them with our customers in order that they can be used on their websites. We're also a very good exponent of creating landing pages, which cover multiple categories and educate in an engaging way, you know, the reasons, the benefits behind our products, and you know, why consumers should be should be considering buying them, whether it be, you know, Wi-Fi or smart home. And I think we're pretty good at that. And that, I think that's one of the reasons why we've grown so fast over the last 10 years in terms of our brand exposure and reputation, really.
I love that, because in order to be able to tell the stories of innovation, you have to find innovative forms of storytelling.
Indeed.
So to find alternative ways to get that content out there in the form of videos and short form, long form and landing pages and gathering resources for people, I think that's really exciting.
Yes, absolutely. And I think it was more important with the technical, you know, sort of potentially technical area of Wi-Fi, and to simplify it and allow and enable the average layman to understand and think, oh right, yeah, I could really benefit from that. You know, they're not looking at how fast it is and all the technical jargon behind it. It's about, you know, it's like, oh, now I understand what, you know, how that benefits me. And I think that's really key for brands like TP-Link to continue to convey.
Of course, yeah. Finally, my last question for you, it's something of a personal obsession of mine. I've mentioned it a little bit, but this idea of human connection, what it is to be human, to forge TP-Links, if you'll pardon the pun, to the world around us, or just create ways to interact with each other. In every sense of the word, I'm here for connectivity and connection. I think if there's a reason that we exist, it's to make connections. What do you see is the role of the smart home to this idea of connectivity and connection?
I mean, I certainly see smart home as the most interesting facet is convenience and to automate your home, but also I think to enable, you know, allowing these devices to communicate with members and of the family and friends, etc., that you don't necessarily see every day. So as you say, it's about, you know, keeping in touch with people and communicating via the internet and just keeping in touch with everyone, really.
Of course. And like we said, the internet was a key worker.
It was.
And I think that, yeah, we would be lost without it. We would have been, and we would continue to be. So long may it continue.
Indeed.
Lino, it's been such a pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, Sophie. Good to meet you again.
And to you. That's it for another episode. Thank you so much for listening to The Smart Life. If you like what you heard, don't forget to rate and subscribe. Plus, you can catch all our past episodes wherever you get your podcasts. Here at Beacon, we specialise in finding innovative, people-centric ways to bring the world of the smart home to life. Got a story you need help telling? Get in touch with us today. Visit www.beaconagency.co.uk.